What we would do is we would shoot a laser beam at the cup. We'd split the beam with a half-silvered mirror with a prism. Half of the beam would hit the cup. The other half would go to a holographic plate behind it or a photographic plate behind it. Then the half that hit the cup would be redirected and both beams would meet up simultaneously just prior to hitting the holographic plate. What they would do is not make a picture of the cup on the plate, but little squiggly lines or interference patterns on the plate. Then with the plate, you would get a picture of a holographic cup floating in midair that you could look at in three dimensions. Now, what's really interesting about the hologram is if you cut the holographic plate in half and shine the light through, you don't get a picture of half the cup. You get the full cup. And you can cut that plate down smaller and smaller and shine the light through, and you still get a picture of the whole cup. Which is to say that within a hologram, the part is in the whole, and the whole is in the part. All of the information necessary to create the entire hologram is contained within the piece. It's kind of like a seed. Contained within the seed is all the information, like contained within an apple seed, is all the information necessary to create the entire apple tree. And then you have the apple that grows on the tree again, and then you have the new seed, and within that seed is all the information necessary to create the tree again. So the part is in the whole, and the whole is in the part. Now, according to Carl Priebram, human memory storage works the same way. The part is in the whole, and the whole is in the part. And we know this is true if you've studied any of Dr. Deepak Chopra's work. He talks about, in quantum healing, he talks about the human memory storage being contained throughout the entire body. For example, when we have somebody that receives an organ transplant, oftentimes they receive with that transplant, they have food cravings that the other person, that the donor had once had. In the book The Heart's Code by Dr. Paul Pearsall, there's a story in there of an 8-year-old girl that receives a heart transplant from a 10-year-old girl who had been murdered. And she receives with that heart transplant, she recovers sufficient memory to find and convict the man who had committed the murder. Now, there was other corroborating evidence as well, but they found him based upon the memory that was transferred. So according to Carl Priebram, human memory storage works the same way. The part is in the whole and the whole is in the part, just like a hologram. And when you think about DNA and what we're able to actually clone a human being or an animal at this point from the DNA, with the memory that's contained within the DNA contains all of the information with the whole. So Carl Priebram said at some point, he asked himself the question, if the human nervous system is holographic in nature, and it appears to be, what's it a hologram of? And Priebram came up with that. He said it was a hologram of the universe.
Is there a way to delete the memory? Is there a way just to get rid of it altogether?
Sure. We'll talk about that as we get into some of the different processes. But according to Priebram, what did he do? He looked at the human nervous system. He said, what is this an example of? He chunked up on it. He said, what is this an example of? What is this an example of? What is this an example of? And he chunked up to the universe. He said, okay, that's about as far as I'll go with that. What's this an example of? So he simply chunked up on the human nervous system. He said, what's this an example of? What's that an example of? What's this an example of? What's this an example of? And he got up to the universe, which isn't new information. It's just corroboration of old information. So, like, I think Hermes Trismegistus said it as far back as 1500 AD. He said it rather well when he said, that which is above is like that which is below, and that which is below is like that which is above. Which essentially means that there's nothing outside of you. There's nothing outside of you. The stuff that makes up the stars and the planets and the sky are the same stuff that make up who you are. You know, we're living in a quantum soup where all of the atoms and molecules are constantly changing, shifting, and rearranging. I think the Greek philosopher Heraclitus said it best when he said, you can't step into a river in the same place twice. So everything's constantly flowing, shifting, changing, rearranging. You have a new stomach lining every 5 to 7 days, according to Dr. Deepak Chopra. 99.9% of all of the atoms and molecules that make up your body are constantly shifting and changing. They're different than they were several years ago. So who you are is constantly regenerating. The air that you breathe in today could have been part of the body of Buddha or Jesus many years ago, or part of the body of somebody in China yesterday. So everything's shifting and changing and rearranging. So, and in a quantum mechanical universe, according to the application of Bell's theorem, all sense of locality loses its meaning. There's non-locality of information, which means all of our ideas of location don't exist in a quantum mechanical world. So that tells us that's how it's possible to measure one photon and find that the other moves, because they're not separate. They're interconnected. Which speaks to an underlying interconnectedness of everything in the universe. And by the way, when Bell's theorem was applied, they found that this is so. This is so, this is science now. So in a quantum mechanical universe, there's no difference between you and that which you see outside of you. There's non-locality of information. And the observer always and intimately also affects the observed. So I think those are the two big learnings to get out of that. That also tells us something else. It tells us, first off, that we can't look at something without affecting it. Okay, the two major learnings are we can't look at something without affecting it. So you affect that which you look at. The world changes based upon who or what is observing it. The observer and the observed are always intimately interconnected. You can't look at something without changing it in some way. That's the first thing. The second thing is that everything's interconnected. There's an underlying interconnectedness to everything. And there's non-locality of information there. So everything's interconnected in some way. What this means is that, I mean, think about it for a second. If there's no difference between you and that which appears outside of you, that means that whenever you have a thought at any given moment, then whatever you think you are, you're always much more than that. Whatever you think you are, you're always much more than that. Any thought that you think puts boundary conditions on the unlimitedness that is you. And within you, it would stand to reason then that you have the resources of the entire universe, if there's no difference between you and that which appears outside of you, which quantum physics says is so, then that means that within you, you should have access to all the resources of the entire universe. And whatever you think you are, you're always more than that. That's one thing. The other thing is that the observer always and intimately affects the observed. Let's take a little closer look at some of the original experiments with light. So in the old days, or not in the old days, in the old days of quantum physics, when they were first experimenting with this stuff, they ran several experiments, and what they found was is that when they looked for light, when they looked for light to behave as a wave, it behaved as a wave. Oops. Yeah. When they looked for light to behave as a wave, it behaved as a wave. When they looked for it to behave as a particle, it behaved as a particle. So the way they looked for it was they set up a box. This is called the double slit experiment. They set up a box with two dividers down the middle with a singular slit on one of the dividers and two slits on the second divider. And what they did was they emitted light from a source. It went through the first slit, it traveled through the first slit, and then it traveled down through the second slits. Now, if they were measuring light as a wave, here's how they knew. Like they said, okay, we've got to figure out, is light a wave or is light a particle? And they said, if we look for light to behave as a wave, then it should behave as a wave. Now, here's how a wave would behave. Just imagine for a moment, like if we had a block of wood on the ground and we attached a rope to it and we waved it like that, there would be wave formations that would go down the rope. Now, you could probably imagine that those wave formations would hit that block of wood at some point and some of them would reverberate back up the rope. Now, if you did that at certain locations, wherever the crest of the wave going down hit the crest of the wave coming up, that wave would be augmented and would become bigger. But, however, if the crest of the wave going down hit the trough of a wave coming up, what do you think would happen? It would stop it, or they would delete each other. Right? So if light behaved as a wave, then wherever the crests of the waves hit the other crests of the waves as they came through here, whoosh, 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 then you would tend to have more light appear in that area. The other areas where the crest of the wave hit the trough of the wave would be deleted out. So if light really behaved as a wave, then they should see bars of light and dark across the back wall of the box. So when they did this experiment, they put the light through, and they noticed that, yes, in fact, when they looked for it to behave as a wave, there were bars of light and dark that appeared across the back of the box, which means that light is a wave. But then, they decided to look for it in a different way. And what they did this time was they emitted the smallest source of light that they could possibly emit, which is a single